Hi, I'm Ed Slott.
And I'm Jeff Levine.
And we're two guys who just love to talk about retirement and taxes.
Look, our mission is simple, to educate you, the saver, so that you can make better decisions, because better decisions, on the whole, lead to better outcomes.
And here's how we're going to do that. Each week, Jeff and I will debate the pros and the cons of a particular retirement strategy or topic, with the goal of helping you keep more of your hard-earned money.
At the end of each debate, there's going to be one clear winner. You, a more informed saver who can hopefully apply the merits of each side of the debate to your own personal situation to decide what's best for you and your family.
So here we go. Welcome to the Great Retirement Debate.
All right. Welcome back to the Great Retirement Debate. Ed, good to be back with you once again.
Yeah. Have an interesting topic.
All right. What's on tap for today?
Well, we don't know what's going to happen with the tax laws after 2025.
You could have just stopped at, we don't know what's going to happen with the tax laws. But all right. So what's happening after 2025?
Well, tax rates are supposed to go back up to the pre-Tax Cuts and Jobs Act levels. You may remember we've been having some nice low tax rates for these past few years, but that train ends after 2025. We're in 2024 now. You have 2 years left to see, should you take action? Should you do some things now, pay some taxes now, or get move assets, Roth conversions, estate and gift tax planning before the rules from the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act are suspended and they go back to the former rates?
All right. So our topic for discussion today, or for debate today, is, should I act now ahead of the scheduled changes at the end of 2025?
And the changes are tax increases.
All right. So we've got the Tax Cut and Jobs Act, passed back in 2017, first really effective for the most part in 2018,
right,
coming to a close here. And, you know, it made a lot of changes. In fact, clearly the most sweeping changes to the tax code in two, 3 decades, right, since the 1986 tax changes, right? Would you agree?
Oh, yeah, yeah, with the across the board, individual income tax rates, capital gain rates, estate and gift tax exemptions.
Even corporate tax rates.
Right, and actually, right. That was one of the biggest.
Yeah, and that's the interesting thing was, you know, when they passed this law, they wanted to do so within $1.5 trillion of additional deficit over 10 years. This was back when 2017, when Republicans had control of the White House, the Senate, and the House of Representatives, and they kind of set themselves a deficit budget, if you will. They said, we're not going to make anything go more than $1.5 trillion of additional deficit over 10 years.
Isn't it amazing how we throw around the word trillion now?
Yeah, a trillion here, a trillion there. It's all the same. So they had this.
I mean, it used to be billions and millions were a lot.
And a couple of years we'll be at quadrillions. Just stick around, Ed. Inflation happens. So, you know, the Republicans, as they came up with this bill, they, with the changes that they wanted to make on the corporate side, so notably taking the top rate from 35% down to 21%, and the changes they wanted to make on the individual side, it was going to put them over budget, if you will. It was going to be more than $1.5 trillion of additional deficit, and they weren't willing to do that. So they effectively had a choice, right? They could have either kind of watered down all the provisions on both sides and made them permanent, made the changes to the personal income tax and personal estate taxes permanent and sunset or reverted the corporate tax rates to their old at some point, or they could have done what they ultimately decided to do, which is make the corporate changes permanent, so that 21% corporate rate is now permanent, but almost all, not everything, but almost all the changes they made on the individual income and estate tax side go back to their old rules, and here's a scary word thought, at the end of next year, like that soon.
Yeah.
So two big areas of change, Ed, income tax changes and estate tax, and let's call it transfer taxes, so estate and gift tax. Let's put that off to the side. We'll come back to that afterwards. Let's talk about income taxes first. Give me a quick rundown of maybe some of the top 3 to 5 things that impacted most people as a result of the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. What were some of the biggest changes that go back?
Well, some of the biggest ones were the lowering of the rates.
Okay.
Obviously, the fact that 90% of the people, according to IRS, are taking the standard deduction now that they raised up, so very few people are itemizing anymore.
Okay, so 2 things right there, right?
Yeah.
The brackets change, and the big one, I think, that got a lot of attention was the top tax bracket, going from 39.6 down to 37. That's scheduled to go back, but even a lot out of the middle tax brackets. We had a 25% bracket. Now we have 24 and 22. There was a 15% bracket. Now we have 12. So even at different income levels, people on average saw a reduction in taxes. You mentioned another big one, the fact that the standard deduction was roughly doubled from where it was. Any other ones that stick out to you as major changes from that are set to revert?
I'll tell you one that's not set to revert, the alimony provision.
That's one that was stuck in there. Yeah, if you get divorced now, it is now even more expensive to get divorced afterwards. It is, I guess Congress felt it was too cheap to get divorced before, so they decided to make these more.
Well, it depends what side you were on.
That's fair enough.
Explain what I'm talking about.
Sure. It used to be that alimony was deductible by the payor, and then the recipient would have to include that in their income taxes. And Congress felt that was unfair because it allowed one person to effectively split income out over two different tax returns.
But they made that provision permanent. I think that was probably smart because then you have people with divorces going back and forth to the different rules.
And that's probably why they did it. You know, one of the other changes that sticks out to me, the Tax Cut and Jobs Act did eliminate miscellaneous itemized deductions. Those come back now, along with exemptions and so forth. Effectively, we go back to the tax rules from 2017.
And I think even casualty and theft losses were in there, too.
And you know what? Everybody's situation is different, right? There's no one provision you can point to say, aha, if this affected you good or bad, then overall it was good or bad for you. Because there's so many things on a tax return that are counterbalance one another. But on the whole, depending upon what estimates you believe, somewhere between 70 to 80% of people saw lower taxes after the Tax Cut and Jobs Act. Now, doesn't mean it's a good thing, doesn't mean it's a bad thing.
Oh,
that depends on your point of view, right?
Wasn't the limitation the $10,000 on real estate taxes?
The state and local taxes, that's right. So real estate taxes, income taxes of your state were capped at $10,000, whereas before it was theoretically unlimited. Yeah. I say theoretically because the alternative minimum tax really stops a lot of folks getting it anyway.
When people complained back at that time, I said, you weren't getting the deduction anyway.
That's
but
right.
They said, but you put it on my return. I put it on your return. I had to tell clients.
So you wouldn't argue with
me.
So
you wouldn't say, I forgot it.
That's right.
But then if you look at the alternative minimum tax, you don't get it.
Yep. Yep. In fact, they gave people $10,000 when they got zero before.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's an AMT is actually another good one that's set to revert, right? So lots of things scheduled to go back about. Look, if 70 to 80% of people have lower taxes now because of these changes, it stands to reason that if nothing changes, then 70 to 80% of people will have higher taxes afterwards. So here's the question, Ed.
Right. I was just going to say,
should people do something about it? Is there something they should do today ahead of these schedule changes?
Well, there's two questions. Should they do something today? And the other question is, or maybe it's the same question, do you think it will really happen? That's a question I get from advisors and seminars. Do you think they're really going to go back in 2026 and raise the rates?
All right, so what do you think?
I don't think so.
No?
First of all, I know we didn't get to the estate and gift tax, but those changes are massive because it doubled the exemption. You're talking about huge numbers. I don't believe, and you may correct me on that, the estate and gift tax exemption was ever lowered in history, other than the 1 year, 2010.
Where we had nothing, yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
But other than that, I don't think it's ever been reduced.
No, it's a straight line pretty much up.
So I think that would be too much of a shock to the system. I think if anything comes back, it's going to be piecemeal. I don't think they're going to say, put the whole thing back as is.
So you think they'll you think they're more likely to extend today's
I think they're
going to
try and do it or cherry pick certain items.
It's a good point. I'm not 100% sure. I don't think anybody is, but I don't. I always take the under when it comes to congressional action, right? Like it's when it comes to Washington, I vote for gridlock.
I know it's going to happen. At the end of 25, it's going to be a political issue.
Yep.
Oh, they're going to raise your taxes. They did that in another tax bill where something was set to come in. Not that they were raising your taxes, but they took away tax reductions.
That's right.
Which is essentially raising taxes. Mm-hmm. So that's going to be whatever side of the aisle is saying it. Oh, they're going to raise your taxes. If we're not in 2026, they're they're raising your taxes. No, this was part of the deal that was made in 2017. But the other part of the question, should people do something now? And I say yes to that.
All right, so what should they do?
Well, let me tell you why I say yes. Because right now, you may think nobody likes to pay taxes. Everybody complains. Everybody says taxes are too high. But historically, we're in the lowest rates you will ever see in your lifetime right now. And one of our other friends has been inflation. Now, inflation, how could that be? Well, inflation, I get it. It means things cost more. But when it comes to taxes, inflation is great. The brackets have been expanded. The rates are the same, but the brackets have been expanded, allowing more income to be passed in unbelievably low historic rates, 22%, 24%,
yep.
Hundreds of thousands able to come out. So you ask me what, in particular, Roth conversion comes to mind. If you can get that IRA money out at rock bottom rates, tax rates are on sale. So whatever happens in 26, which we don't know, we do know today's rates. Why not take advantage of the rates we have right now, which are historically low? And I think I say this in almost every episode. I know I say it in every seminar. The key to keeping more of your hard-earned money is to always pay taxes when the rates are the lowest. And I believe that's right now and probably next year, too, because we know what those rates are and you will have inflation expansion.
So I actually don't disagree with anything you said, but I'll say that I would add a little bit of a nuance to it in that if your income is going to be relatively stable for now and in the future, I think accelerating a lot more today. Where I've seen some people perhaps go the wrong route recently, or you know, is thinking along the lines of, hey, these tax rates are going to go up next year. I should convert now because the rates are low. But right now they're working, right? And in a few years, maybe they're going to retire. They're not going to have that $200,000, $300,000 a year salary. And even though rates might be higher, their income might be a lot lower down the road.
Well, that goes right to what I said. Always pay taxes when your rates, your marginal rates, your bracket rates will be the lowest. And that may be the case. Although I will, just to divert from that a little, I will say people always think they're going to be in a lower rate in retirement. I have rarely seen that, unless somebody had a mega job to make $1 million a year and then they're not. Because if you do nothing, I'm talking about a Roth conversion. Let's say you do nothing, you say, well, my rates will be lower, and that's the reason you convert. You want to convert when rates are lower. Or if you think your rates in retirement will be lower, you won't convert. But if you think that and you're wrong, that means your IRA continues to grow. I'll give you this example. I was telling this client years ago about Roth conversions, and he kept saying, no, I don't want to spend the money. Once I'm retired, I'll be in a lower bracket. Well, that never happens, at least what I've seen. Sure enough, he came in for his tax return for his first full year of retirement with no W-2, because in his mind, which makes sense, I don't have this big W-2. My rates will be lower. So I give him the tax return. Ed, how can this be? My income is higher than my best earnings years. I said, how can this be? It's because you never listen to me. I told you for years to do Roth conversions, start knocking down that IRA. Well, guess what? Look at your RMDs. They're higher than your best year W-2. So look at that. What you're saying makes sense. But for a lot of people, especially that have large IRAs, they may not be in a lower rate. And you don't know what that rate will be in the future, given tax rates. At some point, I believe, whether it's this law or a future law, will have to go up, especially on higher earners. So if you can get that money out now, I would just take advantage of today's low rates. Taxes are on sale. I would cash in on that now.
I think those are all good points. And probably the Roth conversion is the single biggest way that someone could take advantage of today's income tax rates versus the future. Another, you know, just thinking kind of more on the margins, you know, 90% of tax planning is push-pull, right? Is either push out deductions and pull in income, or pull in deductions and push out income, right? One of those two, right? If you believe your rates will be higher down the road, you want to pull in income to today, like the Roth conversion, and push out deductions. If the opposite is true, you want to take the opposite action. So if we believe that rates might be a little bit higher down the road, then some of the other things that someone might be thinking about today, for instance, maybe someone knows they're going to be making a large charitable contribution at some point in the near future.
Oh, you know,
they want to give $100,000, $200,000 more to charity. While they may want to satisfy their charitable intent sooner rather than later, there might be a much bigger tax benefit to doing that once rates go up. Or maybe they're a business owner and they're looking at taking depreciation today, right? The idea, you know, today's tax laws allow a lot of business owners to take depreciation now. You might want to push that out and take
exactly
it more time.
It's exactly as you said. You want deductions when rates are higher. You want income when rates are lower. But now let's switch gears. We're still talking about what's going to happen in 2026. I think the big move is in the estate and gift tax area.
Certainly a big move. Certainly a big change. I mean, we're not talking about taking the 37% tax rate and making it 74%.
Right.
That would be doubling it. Well, that's basically what's going to happen with the estate and gift tax. We're going to take today's exemption of roughly, you know, $13.5 million. Let's call it 14 for just round numbers. $14 million per person.
Well, it could be next year. Let's say next year could be $14 million.
Yep.
That's $28 million per married couple.
And going back to half of that.
Right.
So $7 million roughly a person. If everything goes according to plan. And when I say going according to plan, I don't mean my plan. I mean the existing plan that's set to happen as the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act expires. So Ed, obviously that is a huge reduction in estate and gift tax exemption. One that we've never seen, to your point earlier.
Right.
So would you take action today ahead of that?
I would. Everybody's situation is different, but at a minimum, I would have the conversation, because one of the things you can do, we talk about the estate exemption, so everybody thinks about, oh, when I die, so why can I? How can I plan that?
Yep.
No, the exemption.
That's not the type of planning we talk about.
That's a different program.
Yeah. Different podcast.
No, we're talking about using the exemption can be used during lifetime to lock it in. So we're talking maybe $14 million it'll be before 26, depending on inflation adjustments, just a ballpark number, let's say $14 million. You could lock that in now, depending on your estate and your other plans, but you could get that out now by gifting it absolutely tax-free. You can use the exemption during life. And here's the interesting part. A few years ago, even the IRS said, they came out with a ruling and said, basically, either use it or lose it.
Yep.
And what did they actually say? They said, if you, because this was the big question that came up, if I use my $14 million during life and then it, and I'm still alive, and then by the time I die, it goes down to $7 million, will there be a clawback?
Nope.
And the IRS said, no.
Yeah, that was a big deal.
You know, for somebody in the right bracket with the net worth, we're talking about somebody with high net worth, but you could save a bundle with gifting using some of that exemption right now, or now and in 2025 before it's set to go back to half.
Yeah, I think, you know, you have to separate individuals based on their net worth today and their projected net worth down the road. Certainly, if you have, I think the risk here, right, is that we go back to $7 million a person. So if you have $7 million yourself, if you're married and you have a spouse, that's $14 million. If you think your estate might be north of that at the point you pass away, then you're probably a candidate for thinking about these gifting strategies today. If you think your estate will be lower than that, which, look, let's face it, is still the majority of Americans,
obviously.
Overwhelming majority, then it may actually pay not to gift out, because by gifting out, you actually eliminate certain things, such as a step-up in basis. In other words, if you...
I'm not talking about those assets. I should make that clear. I generally, especially for older people that are closer to their great beyond, I wouldn't give away highly appreciated assets, because you get the step-up in basis. I'm talking pure cash.
Well, if you have $28 million in cash, I'd like to. Yeah, that's a pretty good deal.
No, but I don't want people to think we're saying to give up the step-up in basis. That's too good.
So an important consideration there, right? The trade-off between income taxes and gift taxes. But, you know, there's also, you know, with today, I'd say if I was thinking about the simplest, you know, the slam dunk of situations today, it would be for a married couple with significant wealth using something called a spousal lifetime access trust.
Right.
You know, a SLAT. The big problem with gifting assets during life is that you really have to gift them, right? You have to give them away. But people want to use their assets. They don't necessarily want to give them away.
Well,
the spousal lifetime access trust, or SLAT as it's known, is sort of the best example we have in the estate and gift tax planning world of having your cake and eating it too, right? Giving money away, but still being able to use it yourself. Now, you have to have a spouse and you have to trust your spouse, but that's a potential option here, one that people can think of today ahead of the 2026 schedule changes.
Yeah, you make a good point there, because even when I've talked to clients that had, you know, sufficient, beyond sufficient net worth, there's just something about gifting. What if I'll need it later?
Yes, those with 30 and 40 million saying, what if I need that? Yeah, but to your point, it doesn't matter how much you have
right.
for a lot of people. They just have that level of discomfort gifting. And look, at the end of the day, the gift and estate tax only applies if you have an estate in excess of the exemption, which even if everything happens as it's scheduled to right now, would mean $7 million a person, $14 million for a couple, which is still a lot of money. If you have more than that and you're comfortable hanging on to the money and having your estate subject to estate tax, then that's your choice too. Right.
I would point out another thing, though. There are certain people in certain states like mine, New York, that have a state estate tax. Mm-hmm. Not all states have it. There are a few of them, though. And those can be very high, and they come with a cliff. So the state estate tax can be devastating, even if you're maybe $100,000 over the limit.
Yeah. Definitely add complexity upon complexity upon complexity. So as we think about this ultimately, Ed, we get to wrap up our discussion here today. When we think about the question, should I take action ahead of the Tax Cut and Jobs Act? I think what we come to is everybody's situation obviously is different.
Obviously, yeah.
But for the majority of people, there's no need to necessarily rush to judgment today. On the income tax side, it is either possible, to your point, that a lot of it gets extended going forward, or that you're just in a situation where even if it changes, the situation that you have doesn't warrant adding significant income today because maybe you'll be at a lower tax rate in the situation in the future. And on the estate tax side, looking at gifting makes a lot of sense for those who are in the fortunate situation where maybe
right.
they will die with an estate north of $14 million. But for those with estates less than that, this really doesn't necessarily
right.
affect
But we
them.
Only mention it because it's the most drastic change that's going to happen.
That's right. It is a huge change. And the thing is, it takes the estate and gift taxes impacting a really, 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 really small amount of people to just a really, really, really small amount of people. But if you're in that difference, boy,
right.
does this matter to you. Nothing else may have a bigger impact on your family's
To wrap
future.
Up, I would still take advantage, whether law changes or not, of today's low rates wherever you can, especially with Roth conversions.
Yeah, when you know something is, then you can...
It will be next year.
All right, Ed, let's leave it there. Thanks so much for joining us, everyone. And let us know what you think. Should you take action ahead of the changes at the end of 2025 going back into 2026? You can reach out to us on Twitter, Ed at The Slot Report, and myself at CPA Planner. And we look forward to seeing you real soon for the next episode of The Great Retirement Debate.
Jeffrey Levine is Chief Planning Officer for Buckingham Wealth Partners. This podcast is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be construed as specific investment, accounting, legal, or tax advice. Certain information mentioned may be based on third-party information which may become outdated or otherwise superseded without notice. Third-party information is deemed to be reliable, but its accuracy and completeness cannot be guaranteed. The topic discussed in corresponding arguments are those of the speakers and may not accurately reflect those of Buckingham Wealth Partners.